Welcome to this week's shiur called Simcha, Even Though. Even though what? Even though something seems to be blocking the way to your happiness. Last week, we touched upon envy being in the way, and that if we truly knew everything that people had going on in their lives, we might not envy them after all. We also focused on moving from feeling like, with personal nisyonos, that you just can't take it anymore, to the feeling that maybe there's something I can still do to improve things. I won't usually be basing the Monday shiur on ideas from the Parsha, but this week, Parsha's Korach, the precious pearls of life wisdom are so fitting, because the obstacle to someone's happiness might be conflict. Now, conflict sometimes stems from envy, but even when it doesn't, the solid lessons in Parsha's Korach are very relevant. Our spotlight today will not be on Korach, the instigator, or his followers, but on their target, Moshe Rabbeinu. From the way Moshe Rabbeinu handles the conflict, we learn secrets that we can adapt for our own lives. Again, from the way Moshe Rabbeinu handles the conflict, we learn secrets that we can use for our own lives. So Korach, who envied Moshe Rabbeinu, had everything, mamish everything. He was a Levi, and he was one of the wealthiest men in Klal Yisrael. He had a supportive wife and sons who were Talmidei Chachamim. So what happened to him? What happened is that a little voice inside his head told him that Moshe Rabbeinu was doing whatever he wanted. And in his mind, this false premise warranted a machlokas l'shem shemayim. Machlokas like this, not truly for the sake of heaven at all, can be the worst. Not only do people dive into supposedly holy mitzvah wars with every fiber of their beings, even when Hashem tries to stop them, they think maybe they just need a little more Mesiras Nefesh, and they keep going full steam ahead. It's always a big mess. But how does Korach, who was once upon a time a good person, come to go against Moshe Rabbeinu in the first place? It was the ugly seed of jealousy. Jealous for Moshe Rabbeinu's kavod, jealous for Aaron HaKohen's position, and most of all jealous that Elitzafan ben Uziel was appointed Nasi over B'nai Kahas and not him. Now Korach had to know that Moshe didn't do anything without Hashem telling him, but that seed of jealousy grew inside him until he could no longer stomach it. Hashem gave him so much potential for happiness, and he threw it all away irrationally to go after Moshe. He drags the 250 Nesi'i Eda, who are all Rashi Sanhedrin, into his machlokas, plus the notorious Dasan and Aviram, two brothers who are, of course, more than happy to join yet another rebellion against Moshe. Now, Ohn ben Peles was with him at first, and as we know, his wife saves him at the last minute, but that's later. So one fine day, Korach and 250 Nesi'i Eda, Ohn ben Peles, and Dasan and Aviram literally converge on Moshe and Aaron. With tremendous chutzpah, they proclaim, "We were all at Har Sinai. We all heard the voice of Hashem. We have enough Kedusha in our midst without you being like a king over us and, of course, choosing your own brother for the most prestigious job of Kohen Gadol." Okay, now just watch Moshe Rabbeinu closely from this point on and we'll have all the tools we need to handle conflict in life. So Moshe's immediate reaction is, "Ay, vey, machlokas." Now, how do we know this? Because the Pasuk says, Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe heard, Vayipal al panav, he fell on his face. Rashi says, Mipnei hamachlokas, because it was machlokas. Moshe thought to himself, Rashi explains, how many times can I plead to Hashem on behalf of Klal Yisrael when they do the wrong thing? First Cheda Egal, then the Slav, then the Cheda Haradim, and now machlokas? He wasn't at all busy with the fact that this was an outright attack on his personal kavod, or that he was being disgraced in front of everyone. He was worried about how he could possibly advocate for them yet again, because Hashem does not like machlokas at all. Does he then yell at them? No. The very next pasuk says, Vayedaber al Korach. He spoke to Korach. Ve'al kol hadasa, on his whole congregation. Leimar saying, Boker, in the morning, Ve'yoda Hashem es asher lo. Hashem will let it be known who belongs to him, so to speak, who he's happy with. Why did Moshe wait till the next morning? Because he knew that they were acting illogically, and he thought maybe if he gives them time to sleep on it, so to speak, maybe they'll calm down overnight. But even if not, tomorrow morning they would do a test that would show who Hashem favored and agreed with. What was the test? Both sides would bring a ketoros offering, which is a mixture of spices, and Hashem would show who was right and wrong. How? Because the one or the ones who were in the wrong would die on the spot by the hand of Hashem. Now, they were told this. Now, can you imagine such a challenge today? Winner takes all, loser gets swallowed up alive, never to be seen again. You have to be crazy to agree to such a challenge, unless you're sure you're right. That's how sure Korach was that he was right, because he was told that whoever Hashem is not happy with after they bring the Ketoros, they're going to die by the hand of Hashem. And still, Korach proceeds. He agrees. Now, you would think that things would escalate just for Korach agreeing, and that maybe now Moshe would reprimand him strongly just for putting everyone through this whole ordeal. But instead, Moshe still acts outwardly calm. Talks to Korach even more softly than before. Before, the pasuk says Vayedaber, now it says Vayomer, which Rashi confirms is a softer tone. And we can also see from his words, he says Shimuna, listen, please, B'nai Levi. Korach came from Levi. Shimuna, listen, please, B'nai Levi. Doesn't talk to them in an insulting way. And he tries all he can to prevent the catastrophe, but his words fall on deaf ears. What is he telling them? He says, "You're Levium. You have the privilege of building, carrying, and dismantling the Mishkan. You have the incredible job of singing in the Beis HaMikdash, inspiring Klal Yisrael, and giving an atmosphere of simcha to the Avodas Hashem. Why is this all not enough for you?" What a leader Moshe Rabbeinu is, and how many diamonds are hidden in this whole dialogue. So just to review, number one, his first reaction to being attacked is he falls on his face because why? Ay. Machlokas. Next, he calmly suggests a solution that will allow Hashem to determine who's right and who not, with the offering of Ketoros from both sides. Then he softens his tone even further to try to talk reason with them so that they don't endanger their own lives. His life wasn't at risk, theirs was, by continuing to stoke the fire of Machlokas. At all times, Moshe Rabbeinu was in total control of his actions and reactions. The book Derech Eretz by Shaul Vakshal has a chapter entitled "How Should a Leader Behave?" And he quotes the Sefer Archa Tzaddikim saying, "A person has to speak gently when rebuking another person, especially a leader. Otherwise, the criticism will not be accepted." Now, Korach wasn't very cooperative anyway, but could you imagine how much worse the situation might have come had Moshe not spoken calmly? Now, just imagine a conflict in 2025 for a minute, right? Two sports teams, Lahavdil, are playing against each other. What do the headlines say? This team against that team. Or a public court case. What do the headlines say? So-and-so versus so-and-so, right? One side is either against or versus the other side. Pretty straightforward. So what would you think the Torah would call a fight between Moshe and Korach? Machlokas, machlokas, bein Korach v'Moshe? Machlokas, Korach neged Moshe? None of the above. It's called, and we know this well, Machlokas Korach v'Hadasso. Wait, what? The disagreement between Korach and his congregation? They're both on the same side. But the Torah is being 100% accurate, and this is the biggest diamond of all. Moshe was not part of the Machlokas, because if you don't engage and entangle yourself in Machlokas, it remains a fight between the instigator and himself. Moshe only defends the honor of Hashem, takes quick steps to quell the rebellion before it gets out of hand, but at no point is it about him. Personally, he doesn't try to defend himself to them at all. It's only Korach v'Hadasso that continue fighting, and only they end up being punished. And this is why it's all so relevant to our goal of personal simcha. Using this week's parsha, meaning what Moshe Rabbeinu did in those first crucial hours, is an excellent template that we can use and apply to our lives. If we're careful, it's fail-proof, which means it could succeed in de-escalation every time. So how does it work for us? Number one. You get a rude text, a rude email, a rude letter in the mail, if anyone still knows. Oh, we know what it is. Okay. You have two options that could work. Either you respond calmly to the text or the email, or you don't respond at all, right? Both things keep things calm. Number two, someone insults you on the phone, in person, right? That's a little closer. Same thing. You can respond calmly, or you could immediately end the conversation. But you're in control that it doesn't escalate. Now, let's say you are replying calmly, no sarcasm in your tone. Maybe you're even supplying evidence that you're correct. It's not working. The person's ignoring you, contradicting you, gaslighting you, going in circles. One word, which we learned from Moshe, disengage. Disengage. Hang up politely, leave the room without slamming the door, but end the dialogue. Period. You tell yourself, when I'm not being heard, I stop talking. It took me a lot of years to learn this, but once I learned it, I never went back. It really works. When I'm not heard, I stop talking. You don't have to say that out loud. You say it to yourself. No one can continue arguing with you if you're literally not present to argue with. Your self-respect will be in one piece. Your dignity won't be compromised. And maybe you'll even sleep a little better that night. By the way, intentional relentless abuse is in a different category and beyond the scope of this share. Okay, somebody that's trying to hurt you is not going to stop no matter what. Now back to the parsha. Doesn't an Avirim add even more severe chutzpah to the mix? You could check it out in the parsha. And still, Moshe doesn't engage. In other words, doesn't an Avirim provoke Moshe even more? He doesn't engage with them. This is very interesting. The pasuk says, "Vayichar leMoshe ma'od." Moshe got very angry. So you probably think, "Ah, oh, finally, now Moshe is going to be a human being." But he doesn't say a word to them. "Vayomer el Hashem." It says, "Vayichar leMoshe ma'od." Like what doesn't an Avirim said and did made him angry. But "Vayomer el Hashem," he turns to Hashem and he says, "Hashem, you know I have never taken even a single donkey for myself. I have never wronged a single yid. I never did anything to them." But who is he talking to? Hashem. Who is he defending himself to? Hashem. To whom does he cry, "I'm innocent"? Hashem. That's another tool we can use. People are treating you like a bad person, or as David HaMelech says so succinctly, "Asher lo gazalti az ashiv," what I didn't steal, I must return. Turn to Hashem and cry out to him. Hashem, you know the truth, and you know how much I hate arguments and disagreements. Please help me to stay quiet and not get entangled in this. Please end this machlokas. So even when Moshe reaches the point of anger, he doesn't direct his anger to the person who's making the machlokas. He talks to Hashem. Okay, so back again to the parsha. Moshe once again reminds Korach and his people, come tomorrow. He again guides them step by step how the Ketores challenge will play out. And Moshe hopes to call it a night, at least till tomorrow. But no, Korach and his mob, which this is what they were at this point, they spend the entire night at the entrance to Ohel Moed making fun of Moshe and Aaron. And not only that, Korach goes around continuing to try to convince all of Klal Yisrael. "You think I'm doing this just for myself?" he says to them. "If we don't stop Moshe and Aaron now, they'll take all the great positions for their own families," and on and on and on till morning. So we all know the very tragic ending. It's actually not so clear. I had to consult several people to get it clear, because the ground beneath them opens up and there's a fire. So it's not clear right away. Like my son had to look up a few different mefarshim, who got swallowed up in the ground and who was burnt with the fire that Hashem brought down. So it turns out that it's Korach and his entire household and all of his riches and all of his servants and maidservants. They all got swallowed up into the ground. His sons did teshuva the last minute. And then the 250 Nesi'e Eda who brought the Ketores, which was considered a chutzpah, they got burnt in a fire that Hashem brought. And right after the earth opens up and swallows up Korach and his whole household and all of his riches, the earth closes up. And the story doesn't even end there. Because since right after the Ketores, they got punished and so many died, a lot of Yidden had tainas on Moshe and Aaron. They said, "You're killing us with the Ketores. The Ketores just killed hundreds of people. So now there's like a new rebellion, sort of." And it wasn't just two or three people. It says 14,700 people died in a magefa for complaining to Moshe and Aaron that, and having tainas on them, "You killed these people." So it's like disaster on top of disaster. So Aaron HaKohen rushes into the midst of the people perishing from the plague, brings a public Ketores to Hashem, and the plague stops instantly. So what started off as a huge Chil Hashem, where thousands of people are saying, "Look what this Ketores does. Who needs this? It kills people." Aaron brought the Ketores again to show when you're bringing it, when the right person is bringing it in the right context, not only doesn't it harm, it heals, and instantly the Magefa stops. So the people learned a lot of lessons. the hard way, but they learned them. Also, something interesting, the Haftorah is from Sefer Shmuel, and it says in tiny letters, you probably both knew this, I don't remember learning this, that Shmuel is from a descendant of Korach's sons who did Teshuvah, so that's unbelievable. Okay, I know you have 5 minutes left, right? I think we're going to finish on time. So it's a strong lesson for all of us not to let machlokas enter our lives. And if it creeps into our lives, let's try to take the high road as much as possible. Only in novels do we get to see bad guys get what's coming to them. In the real world of Russia Vatovlo, your enemies do not vanish the day they start up with you. But your life can still be peaceful, and the machlokas that they tried to drag you into without success will one day be named after them, not you. May Hashem protect us all. I just want to add one thing before sharing two light and enjoyable stories with you. We need some lightness here. In the same book that I quoted earlier, Derech Eretz by Rav Shaul Vakshal, he quotes a Rabbeinu Usher from a sefer called Orchos Chaim. A person should avoid involving himself in another's dispute. Eventually, they will reach accommodation and you will still be involved in the dispute. And there are other reasons too. Gossiping about people ruins lives, and mixing in can be disastrous. So remember, you don't want anyone's machlokas to be named after you, Chas v'Shalom. Let's keep the focus of our lives on Simcha and not the latest neighborhood news. And here's enjoyable story number one. Rav Avram Genachovsky, a Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, who has already passed away, was once sitting on a bus, which is the main transportation for almost everyone there, when a non-religious woman boards the bus, looks around, and then sits down right next to him. Thinking quickly, Rav Genachovsky, who doesn't want to offend her or start an unnecessary argument, simply says very quietly to the lady, I'm sorry, I just feel that I should let you know I have cruspidin. The lady jumps up. She apologizes profusely in case she's offending him, and she somehow finds a seat far away from him in like 2 seconds. If this cruspidin is contagious, she wasn't taking any chances. Now, in case you're wondering what cruspidin is, actually, it's the Aramaic word for tzitzis. Was he wearing tzitzis? Yes. So look how a little creativity saved the situation from spiraling into machlokas. He basically, like, he didn't say anything not true. He used the Aramaic word for tzitzis, right? And she got scared. And she was the one that got up and left. She even apologized to him. Enjoyable story number two just needs a little hekdama. I learned from my mother, Allah Shalom, that just because we're upset doesn't mean we have to use the exact words that describe how mad we are. Whenever one of us did the wrong thing, and I'm the oldest of 10, so can imagine a lot of wrong things happened over the years, she would always say phrases like, "Ay, so stuzan gesund und stark." For those who don't know what that means, in Yiddish it means, "Ay, you should be healthy and strong." Right? It was like, I guess she probably heard it from her mother. We knew when she said, "Ay, zelstuzan gesund und stark," that we did something wrong, but it's also, she's not saying anything bad. Or she would just sigh. We understood that sigh also. Or sometimes she would start a sentence with the words, "In the future, please, whatever." Now today, the Olam HaShaker says, the closer you feel to someone, the more honest you could be. That's today's policy. Wrong. Not when your honesty will hurt a person, right? Doesn't matter how close you are. So let's see if we can say this last story really quickly. My son Yehuda told me that there was once a Rebbe, originally from Hungary, who taught young Lebedecker boys, and whenever they were a bit too rambunctious, they could hear him muttering all kinds of strange words under his breath. They could never quite make out what he was mumbling about them, no matter how hard they tried. One day at the end of the year, I think, someone asked the Rebbe what kind of insulting Hungarian names he was calling them all year long. And you know what he said? There are 12 stones on the Choshen, and Onkelos has Aramaic translations for each one. When the boys misbehave, I sometimes need to remind myself that these are Hashem's precious kinderlach, and I use the Targum's names for the Avnei HaChoshen. That's what I'm saying. It releases some of my tension, and the kids know they better shape up. The whole year, they thought he's saying who knows what, and he was just saying the Aramaic words of the Choshen. First of all, because it kept, you know, they had no idea what he was saying. It scared them a little. And also because at the same time, it reminded him, Lamaisa, they're precious stones, no matter how they're acting right now. So one last practical takeaway from today could be, we don't have to say exactly what we're feeling. We can think it. We can take practical action to fix it, but we don't have to express every negative thought that we have to others. Hashem is a better address anyway, and he can actually help us too. Thank you so much for listening.